Wait, but let's call your theory of this intelligence, for lack of a better word, let's call it God.
Well, I mean, and that's what Stephen Hawking, you know, calls the mind of God. Einstein talks about, he's not talking about the kind of anthropomorphic entity that many would think of, but he's talking about, I think that both Einstein and Hawking are talking about something very similar to what I'm talking about.
Well, and I was going to say, though, that let's take your thoughts of what this divine creator was or is, and equate it with what so many people who are extremely religious believe God to be. Isn't it possible we're talking about the same thing?
Yeah, but I guess where I'm coming from is I want to use the resources of discovery and analysis and science to probe as far as we possibly can, to put the pedal to the metal in terms of trying to understand what the process is and what that entity is.
Well, I don't think there's anything wrong with that, because I do think that science and religion cross over a lot.
I agree with that. And you know, one of the things you'll see this in my book, that there was Stephen Jay Gould had this idea that, you know, we ought to sort of totally separate out the what he called the magisteria, the separate realms, you know, science and religion, and they ought to kind of live in peace and kind of separate but equal. And I think that's totally unrealistic. I think they interact vigorously and very productively. There was a wonderful lecture by the British philosopher Alfred North Whitehead, where he said that the reason that science developed in the Western world was because the Judeo-Christian religious tradition imprinted the Western mind with the idea that in fact the universe, the cosmos, was ordered, that it adhered to laws of nature, and that was a key kind of cultural conditioning that led to the birth of science.
Well, why don't physicists sit back and realize that the laws of science, the laws of physics, the laws of the universe have got to have been directed under some form of intelligence, because there's just no way it would just happen?
Well, it's a very good question, and some of them are beginning to consider that. You know, Paul Davies is beginning to think about that. But I think that they're scared to death of venturing out into the, you know, the realm of what they view as the sort of illegitimate realm of creation science and that sort of thing. And I guess one of my goals is to say that, in fact, you can have a concept of intelligent design that is thoroughly based in the latest advances in science, and that is essentially agnostic as to the quality of the creator. And if I can convince him of that, and I think I've begun to, I'll consider that a major achievement, if nothing else.
Somewhere along the line, then, these life forms, much like what we are, started cropping up all throughout the universe on planets.
And I believe that, you know, a falsifiable prediction of my hypothesis is, in fact, that is occurring and has occurred in our current cycle.
There could be thousands, millions, maybe?
Billions. Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Some advanced, some not.
Some advanced, some not. And, you know, sort of following a kind of bell curve, a normal distribution.
Perhaps are we all collectively contributing to this higher intelligence?
That's what I believe. One way to think about it is that we're serving a function in building that higher intelligence, kind of like what mitochondria served when they became incorporated into eukaryotic cells, or the cells that compose our body. They were once free living organisms that essentially their talents were harnessed in a way to produce the next stage of evolution.
It's too bad we can't do a DNA throughout the universe, and I bet we'd find that we're similar all over the place.
There's a lot of thinking on that score going on right now, and there's a wonderful British biologist by the name of Simon Conway Morris, who has hypothesized that, in fact, when and if we find ET, because of the pattern of convergent evolution, you know, that you see the same body shapes turning up through all kinds of different species and phyla, he would not be a bit surprised if there were not strong physical resemblance.
Well, it's even like this planet, James. I mean, though all the animals and beings are different, obviously, I mean, they all have a couple eyes.
Bilateral symmetry.
Yeah, ears, a mouth, a nose, they arms, feet, or whatever you want to call it. I mean, there's the similarities between these creatures on this planet. And I find that to be the most fascinating aspect of life here. Because
yeah, it's very interesting.
Yeah.
And it's and Morris has extended that conjecture to, you know, to extraterrestrial life as well.
Well, you know how they say, too, that a dog looks like its owner.
Yeah.
They don't know how close they are when they say that.
That's for sure.
This thought of, I've got to ask you this, and I want to spend a little more time digesting the book with you next hour. Do you believe in angels?
No.
You do not?
I do not.
Okay, that's where we differ.
Okay.
Why do you not?
I guess I don't see any physical evidence of it.
All right. What about spiritual evidence? What about people who say, my guardian angel saved me, and I know, I can feel him. He did something. The wheel of my car, without me touching it, turned to the right, and I avoided an accident. Would that be circumstantial?
I would never dismiss completely, you know, any possibility. But I would be. I am at heart a skeptic,
mm-hmm.
and so I'm very much like Seth is, and my test is the same, I guess, as Carl Sagan's for extraordinary claims. I'd want extraordinary proof.